Guitarathon is the greatest guitar sale on earth, and it's happening now. Get massive savings on a huge selection of electric and acoustic guitars, basses, amps, pedals, and other accessories. Get select Ernie Ball strings, 3 for $10. Save $100 on a Fender Special Edition Strat, or get a Yamaha acoustic for just $199. Plus, get special financing on select major brands. Don't miss these incredible deals. Available online and in-store, now through November 1st. Guitarathon, only at Guitar Center. Find your sound.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm here as always with David Ramil. We got a big show today, a lot of things that we want to touch on. We have a mailbag later today, but I wanted to start with the solar eclipse that happened yesterday. We're recording this on Tuesday. Solar eclipse was on Monday, in case you were under a rock or just in the space of total darkness. I didn't see it, David. Everybody told me I needed to see it. I was indoors in a room without windows. I look up, and the next thing I knew, the solar eclipse was over, right? It was going to be, I think, at 10:15 in the morning, my time. I look up, it's like 10:30, and I look out. I find a window, I look out, and it's all done. I did watch it a different way. I watched it online. I think maybe that's just the millennial in me watching.
Yes, millennials are ruining solar eclipses.
What did I miss? Did I miss anything important? I feel like I didn't miss anything important. I feel like everybody was disappointed after.
You see, I got a completely different vibe, and that's very interesting. And I'm not sure, from people I talk to, people on like Facebook or even on Twitter, I saw like a general level of enthusiasm, and maybe it's just Floridians in general that got a different perspective of it. From our perspective, I think it was peaking, like in Gainesville specifically where I live, it reached like an 87% like coverage of the sun. Mm-hmm. So the moon was totally blocked, or mostly blocking out the sun, and it peaked around 2:45 or so. So there was quite a bit of build up before the actual peak time there. So I heard people were getting up from the university, classes were letting their kids out. Wow. County schools had let kids off, even though school just started a couple of days ago. They were like, you don't have to come in, so that you could stay home and watch the eclipse. I couldn't find solar eclipse glasses anywhere.
I actually
went outside around like 1:30, 1:45, and a bunch of neighbors were filling all over the street, and they're like, oh, wow. And they're all staring up, and I'm like kind of trying to peek through my hands so I won't go blind. And they're like, hey, you want to borrow my glasses? And I was like, hell yeah. So I borrowed them. It was phenomenal, man. It was, you know, those pictures that you see online about the partially blocked sun, phenomenal. I have never seen it directly.
Did it get
like
dark?
Yes. It wasn't quite dark. The way I explained it was that it was mostly like mega light. It was daytime. You could feel that it was daytime, but it was almost like this really weird dusk. Like not quite like cloud cover where you can still see light permeating. And there was almost like it was coming through the tree line over my house, and the reflection on the asphalt and sidewalk, it was weird. It was like a photo negative of what normal light looks like. It was very, very bizarre. And I saw other pictures on Facebook of people who saw similar shading, from the eclipse. And not only that, but I mean, I tend to think that I'm particularly attuned with things of nature, and like birds got really, really quiet. Insects started, like they almost shut down completely. And I have a bunch of like cicadas behind my house. Being in Gainesville, you hear a lot of swamp bugs and stuff like that. And they were all like at a manic pitch during the eclipse itself. It was pretty eerie. Like the hair on my neck started going back up. I felt like I was on quite a bit of drugs, and it was incredible. It was an incredible experience. I got to be honest with you. It was a really, really cool thing. So I'm sorry if you were disappointed or you didn't get a chance to see it. And if other people were disappointed, well, they should have come to Gainesville. But I heard people were going up to like South Carolina, that there were no more rental cars in the whole state of South Carolina.
Wow.
So many people had driven to Charleston, and they were flocking the beach area there just so they could see the eclipse.
Oregon was the big spot on the West Coast.
Yes,
a lot of people
I
were going up
that.
To Oregon. I had just a lot of cloud coverage where I was. And so you couldn't really see a whole lot. I was able to see a little bit in the beginning. I walked outside, saw a little bit of like a crescent moon, it looked like.
Yes.
At first, but then I had to go back in inside, and then I looked up and it was gone. But I was watching online on NASA's website. And it was a much better view online. Like I got, it wasn't cloudy at all. Like I got to see the whole thing happen. I had a great view from my computer, the chair in front of my computer. So I just watched like a millennial. I just did it all online. I didn't go outdoors. I don't know.
Yeah, unbelievable. Millennials are ruining celestial events. That's the headline on Slate or something on the next couple of days.
Oh, millennials are killing everything. Anytime a millennial kills something, I hear about it on my Twitter feed and I have to get up in arms and get online outraged.
You have to be aware of all the things that you're killing so that you can, you know, confirm it to them.
I was reading on, I think, Business Insider or something the other week that millennials are killing beer sales.
Because they prefer wine and spirits now.
Well, because beer sales were down 0.1%. Which doesn't seem like that seems more like flat. Like saying that's down is a pretty strong stance on that, right? If you're down a tenth of a percent, I don't see that as being a big deal. I also heard that we're killing chain restaurants like Applebee's and Fridays.
That I can't understand why. Do you like going to chain restaurants, Wes?
No, it's overpriced, and the food's not good, and that's why I don't eat there.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
Sorry, Applebee's. I didn't realize Applebee's needed defending. I didn't know Applebee's needed saving. Sorry that we're killing Applebee's. Maybe make better food, Applebee's. If Applebee's would like to sponsor the Locked On Heat, they'd be more than welcome.
I won't turn down any chain restaurant if they want to sponsor us.
More of a Fridays guy. So you tried to look directly at the sun. I actually did look directly at it when it wasn't fully eclipsed, I guess, is the phrasing. And my eyes did hurt for a little bit after. I was kind of like seeing spots. But Donald Trump looked right at it. So,
well, we don't want to follow anything he does too closely. Sorry, listeners. But
if he goes blind, maybe he can't use his Twitter account anymore and America will be saved?
No, I don't think so. I think he can get somebody to tweet full time. I also read, because I was very concerned because I was looking up at the sun directly. Apparently, the full effect doesn't kick in for like a day or two. So you're not out of the woods yet. By the next time a podcast we record, you could have some serious issues. Now, apparently, what they said was...
I don't believe that at all.
Well, apparently, it's, again, because light goes through the cornea of your eye and then it impacts your retina. And then you start experiencing retinal swelling and possible even snapping of your retina altogether where it jars loose. And, of course, that leads to permanent blindness. So, and there's no way of repairing retinal cells either. So it's like one of the few organs that doesn't just like self-reproduce cells to repair itself. So, it could lead to some issues there. Wow. And what I did hear also was that you have to stare at it for like 18 seconds or longer directly. Okay.
I looked at it for like maybe half a second and I was like, ow, and I looked away. I don't have very much pain tolerance when it comes to staring at the sun.
Yeah, I think that's probably for the best, I think you'll probably be safe.
That was my body saying, don't do this.
Yeah, dude, you want to go blind? I mean, that's what your eyes are saying. Hey, stupid, we kind of like to see things. Let's not stare at the sun too long.
Well, you also don't want to stare at ticket sites all day.
My God.
When you're looking to go to your next event that you want to go to, concert, sporting event, whatever you want. You don't want to be sitting there on your computer staring at all these different web browsers and everything. Just go to one site or just use one mobile app. It's SeatGeek. Buying tickets to sports and concerts can be complicated, but there's a better, simpler way to buy, and that is with SeatGeek. They are the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to live events. SeatGeek's seamless mobile experience lets you buy and sell tickets in just two taps. SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There's nothing quite like seeing your favorite team or musician in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. I've got the SeatGeek app on my phone. It's by far the easiest way that I found to shop for tickets. I can be anywhere with just a few taps. I can instantly find seats. I've used SeatGeek several times this year already. I don't have any more concerts on my list, but I'm keeping an eye out. Via SeatGeek, they let you know when there's certain concerts and artists that are in your area. Maybe I'll use SeatGeek for some games next season.
Absolutely.
But I have the app on my phone, so I can always check. They're designed to make your ticket buying experience easier than ever. They save you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. To get the most bang for your buck, SeatGeek grades every ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets with confidence. Make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals on every type of ticket, from sports and concerts to comedy and theater. Best of all, our listeners get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app, enter the promo code LONBA today. That's promo code LONBA. $20. How many pairs of solar eclipse glasses does that get you?
I don't know. I have no idea how much it costs.
The next one is in 2024 for our listeners who didn't get a chance to see this one. I watched it online, so I can check that off my bucket list. But
yeah, I wonder what will happen then. By that time, well, you'll still be a millennial generation, but at the same time,
I will always be a millennial, killing things one industry at a time.
Well, I see. You know, it's good though. You're killing Applebee's and Celestial Events, but you're saving ticket purchase with using SeatGeek. So it's a wash as far as I'm concerned.
All right, let's get into our mailbag. I've got the questions here somewhere. Let's start. Oh, here they are. Let's start with our first one.
Not a question, mostly like a news update, particularly surrounding one of our favorite Heat players.
So Dwayne Wade, he's enrolled his children in school in South Florida, according to Andy Slater, who is a host on 940 AM. You can look at Dwayne Wade's Snapchat, and in the last couple of days, he was teaching his son how to drive a Ferrari.
Oh.
Well, he's teaching his son how to drive. In a Ferrari.
It just happens to be in a Ferrari. Right.
So he's like, well, I'll just take... I don't want to take out the any of these fancy cars. Let me just take the Ferrari. We'll just take the cheap one out.
Oh, that doesn't qualify as a fancy car? Because I was going to say like a Nissan Sentra or something like that.
I don't know what Wade's garage entails as far as what kind of cars he has.
And that's no knock on Nissan Sentra.
Like, can't take out the McLaren or taking out the Ferrari. Yeah, Nissan is more than welcome. So my cousin had a Nissan once. Good car. So Dwayne Wade is teaching his son how to drive in a Ferrari, right?
That's in very South Florida? Different.
So there were palm trees.
Okay. So it's a good sign.
Right? So it looked like South Florida. I can't confirm just because I've never seen South Florida from the inside of a Ferrari, but
it looks a lot like any other,
I don't know.
Car, I think. I think it's the same.
So, okay, so he's teaching his son how to drive in a Ferrari, which is different than teaching your son to drive a Ferrari, right? Those are two different things. He was doing the former. But with Andy Slater confirming that Dwayne Wade's kids are back in school in South Florida, school is in session again, and with that Snapchat that looks like South Florida, is this a big deal, is this a little deal, or is this, like, nothing?
Well, I can't confirm that it's South Florida because I'm looking at it right now, and that is definitely landscaping around South Florida. I mean, there are definitely like trees and streets there that are indicative. I would say it's probably Miami Beach, to be honest with you.
That's what I'm thinking.
There are areas of North Miami Beach that seem wide enough that might be like Alton Boulevard or something like that. Anyway, the point being, is it a big deal as far as his connection to South Florida? It's great to think that he's comfortable enough. This is his home. This is the only home his kids have ever known, really, aside for a one-year vacation in Chicago. I guess what he's saying is that his tenure in Chicago is likely to come up. He doesn't want to have to pull him out halfway through the year when he gets bought out. Why not go ahead and start him in South Florida this year at the start of the school year, make sure that they remain consistent in their academic pursuits wherever they might be. So he probably enrolled him in the same school that they were enrolled in before he was traded. You know, they took 1 year, went to whatever school they went to in Chicago, came back to the same school in South Florida that they had gone to before. Now, as far as his tenure in Miami continuing, I don't see it as that much of a connection. I mean, these players are removed from the day-to-day life of their children just because they have to. Like, he can't travel back and forth even when he's, they play 41 games in Chicago, but that scheduling is so difficult. There's no consistency there. You're there one day, you're in, California the next, you're in Milwaukee the day after. You never know where the heck you are from one day to the next. So I don't know that it's necessarily that important. They probably have a relative or maybe his wife. Somebody has to watch over these kids during the NBA season. So I don't know that it's necessarily a sign that he's coming back to
Miami.
I'm
with you. I think South Florida is just Dwayne Wade's home. And that's what it seems like. And if he is bought out from Chicago, We don't know when that's going to happen. The season might already start when that occurs. It might be right before the season starts. We don't know. And I don't think he knows either. So if that is going to happen and everybody believes that it's inevitable, then why live in Chicago? We know that the issues Chicago's having. Maybe he doesn't want his kids there if he's not even playing home games there.
Right.
Move your kids to South Florida. That's going to be home anyway. I don't think he ever got rid of his South Florida home in the first place. So it makes sense. Enroll your kids there. I'm going to go somewhere else. And look, Joe Varden of Cleveland.com, for another report that's happened recently, reports, he says on a podcast for Cleveland.com, as of right now, people close to LeBron James are fairly confident that at some point this year, Dwayne Wade is going to end up on the Cavs. That's a quote. So you could look into the South Florida school stuff and the Ferrari thing and say, well, maybe Wade is coming back to the Heat. But this report has LeBron James confident that Wade will join him in Cleveland, which could, you know, that makes sense of what you're saying. South Florida is just going to be the home of them. Wade will go somewhere else. Doesn't really matter where he is. You barely see your kids during the regular season anyway.
Right.
So, Dwayne Wade, Cavaliers, that's another one of those destinations that makes sense. The Heat, the Cavaliers, we've talked about the Rockets. It seems like things are maybe building up towards an eventual buyout for Wade.
Yeah. I mean, I, at this point, I'm sure it's something that for all the negative publicity, and rightfully so, that the Chicago front office gets, I'm sure they probably reached out to Dwayne Wade and his representative. Is he still represented by Henry Thomas?
As far as
I know, there was that conflict. There was that conflict of interest there, but I wonder. I mean, they probably let him know, look, you know, you're not part of the plans. Unfortunately, we traded Jimmy. We had to get young. We want to get the guys that we have on our roster some playing time. We're going to have to move on. And so now it's probably just a matter of negotiating how much. And from Wade's perspective, he doesn't have to take a penny less than what he's owed.
Right.
So it's just how much he's willing to give up, really.
Yeah, it makes so much sense for Chicago to just buy him out. I know that ownership will try to save money wherever they can, but it's a sunk cost at this point. If you're Chicago, just buy him out, pay the $23.8 million, and you've got to develop your young guys. But that would be the smart thing to do at this point. I mean, you're paying Wade either way.
How much can Chicago pay him, right? A veteran minimum?
How much can Chicago or Cleveland?
I mean, sorry, Cleveland.
Yeah, the veteran minimum, which would be... Miami can pay him the veteran minimum, obviously, but they also have the mid-level exception, which is $4.3 million. So I don't know. It'll be about twice as much as that, but that's kind of overblowing it. It's about $2 million more than what the veteran minimum is.
I mean, it sounds like a heck of a lot of money for most listeners and us, but at the same time, I don't think it's... I think it's more than money at this point. Like, he wants to look. I mean, I have concerns about him being willing to take the veteran minimum because so much of salary, particularly in the NBA context, is about status symbol, and you want to get paid. You want to get paid $1 more than the next guy, et cetera.
Right.
But I don't know he's. You know, I think he'd probably be willing to take less money so he could play alongside.
He's going to still get paid from Chicago. That's where his salary is coming from, regardless. Whether or not he takes a little bit off the top of that just to facilitate the buyout or whatever, he's still going to be making most of his money from the Bulls, right? That's where his checks are going to be coming from. So
absolutely.
All right, let's get to our first mailbag question. This one comes from Billy Mizell. He says, although I've lived here in West Palm Beach since 2001, I was born in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and my family has been steeped an LSU sports culture my entire life. So you can imagine my surprise when the Heat signed, seemingly out of nowhere, former Celtics/LSU big man Jordan Mickey. The Heat seem well stacked in the front court, leaving most of Heat Twitter to believe that Mickey's chances of actually making the 15-man roster is minimal at best. But this young man is no slouch. His achievements include NBA D-League All-Star in 2016, first-team All-SEC in 2015, second-team All-SEC in 2014, two-time SEC All-Defensive Team in 2014 and 2015, and SEC All-Freshman Team in 2014. What are your guys' thoughts on the Heat signing him in the first place, why they'd add yet another big man to the squad right now, and especially when they're so thin at small forward, and whether or not you think Mickey ultimately makes the cut in the end? Long question, but a good question. We've got to talk about Jordan Mickey, David. I'm really excited about this guy.
Yeah, quick aside there. Do you know what Baton Rouge means?
Something that's red? I don't know.
Hey, yeah, that's very good. Red stick, actually.
Baton. Red stick?
Yeah, Red Stick, yeah.
Old Red Stick, Louisiana.
I kind of like that. I wish it was Red Stick, Louisiana. Baton Rouge sounds a little too fancy for my taste. But
if you've ever been to Baton Rouge, it definitely is a little too fancy to be called Baton Rouge. Or the name is, it's not fancy enough to be called Baton Rouge.
There you go. It should be Red Stick.
It should be Red. So Jordan Mickey from the great city of Red Stick, Louisiana. Or I don't know where he's from, but he went to college there.
I don't know much about Jordan Mickey. I know you do, so I will definitely defer to your thoughts. I did read up a little bit, and I can listen. You know, our listeners should definitely check out Chris Reichert's latest piece about him. He wrote for him for the great website Two Ways, 10 Days, about the G League, all things G League related. Nobody's as plugged in as Chris and Adam Johnson. They run this site. Great guys. Definitely check them out on Twitter and subscribe to their website, podcast, etc. But he writes about Jordan Mickey, and it was a very interesting point of view in that, you know, traditionally a lot of teams are looking for what they call the 3-and-D guy. Mm-hmm. But this is – Jordan doesn't fall into that categorization. He's a 3-and-B guy. He's more of a stretch player offensively, but he has the length and the timing to adequately block shots and be a good rim protector in today's league. So, you know, guys like he doesn't make this comparison necessarily as far as – you know, in the same skill set or still, you know, skill
Town
strata.
Level, yeah.
Right. But Karl-Anthony Towns, Kristaps Porzingis, guys like
Draymond that, Green. There's Draymond an archetype Green. That he's talking about.
Yeah. Serge Ibaka, guys that can block shots, stretch the floor, et cetera. I mean, that's I think, the higher level, the upper echelon of what this Mickey player can be. But that's the skill set that he seems to have. And he's still just, what, 24 years old? So there's room for growth.
He's already better than Serge Ibaka.
You're a hater. You're an Ibaka hater, man. I don't know what it is about you. Yeah.
So I also look. Yeah, absolutely. 2 days, 10 days. .com. Check out Chris Reichert's piece on Jordan Mickey. I referred to that piece in my story about the Heat signing Jordan Mickey and just kind of spun that in terms of how he would fit on the Heat since I signed him. And basically, look. Yeah, you're right. They're getting a guy who can hit threes on one end of the court and defend the rim on the other. In the D League last year, he played for the Maine Red Claws, who are the Boston Celtics D League affiliate.
So did Rodney McGritter.
Right. 43.8% shooting on 2.7 three-pointers a game.
That's pretty good.
And he blocked 2.8 shots a game.
Now, he only played 12 games for the Red Claws, correct?
How many games?
12 games? I think he only played
games.
Like 12
games. Yeah, he only played 12 games, so it's a small sample size. Otherwise, he was on the bench. For Boston, he was the 33rd pick in 2015, so right there at the top of the second round, out of LSU, as Billy mentioned. I liked him at LSU. I liked him when he was in the draft. A lot of people project him as a possible first-round pick, but he fell into the second round and never really got a chance in Boston because they were so – number one. Mainly because they're so deep in that at that position in the front court. They sign Al Horford. There's not necessarily room for Jordan Mickey, who's just fell in line with a lot of their young players who weren't taken in the first round, right? Just there wasn't enough playing time to go around. Now, could he have done more to earn more playing time? Sure, but look, Chris has got a really great eye for talent, and if he thinks Mickey is the real deal, I trust him, right? So, and the Heat also obviously have a great eye for talent, especially from the D League. They got Hassan Whiteside, Tyler Johnson, Rodney McGruder. Yeah. Mickey could be the next guy. I like him a lot. 6'8", 235 pounds. So going back to our question here, why would they take another big man on this roster? They've got Whiteside. They've got Kelly Olynyk this year. They drafted Bam Adebayo. They have Okoro White. They have James Johnson. Justice Winslow could play some four. I don't know where Mickey fits in, but he's going to compete. And I think that's what Miami is looking for right now is get young guys who are versatile, who will compete for playing time, who are hungry, who maybe have not have gotten the best shot in previous stops. We know that the Heat like those kind of players, a.k.a. Sure. James Johnson, right? Tyler Johnson. And let's see what he has. And as far as whether he'll make the roster or not, I think he will because his contract is fully guaranteed. Right now, he is on the roster, right? I think this pushes Matt Williams out, who is basically on a training camp deal. The Heat still have A.J. Hammonds, who may or may not make the final roster. I think he's probably first on the chopping block if somebody were to get let go. But Mickey, I think he's got a really good chance. Guaranteed contract, really versatile, 3-and-B type player. a guy that they have a couple of, you know, if you think O'Kara White can be that. James Johnson is certainly that. He's a good rim protector at his position. Could space the floor a little bit. I'm really happy about this signing. I was surprised, too. I was pleasantly surprised when they announced it.
Yeah, I didn't expect that move to be made. And I, as far as the overall reasons why, I don't think you can ever accumulate too much talent. He didn't break through Boston's, you know, front line. Obviously, they had Kelly Olynyk there, who's now in Miami, obviously. So that's an interesting, ironic twist there. But they also, as you mentioned, had Horford. They had Amir Johnson. They had Jonas Jerebko. They had other bigs there. Tyler Zeller? Tyler Zeller, correct?
Yes.
Okay. I forgot which Zeller, but yeah. So they had a bunch of people there blocking Mickey's path. You know, and as a second-round pick, it's not like you have so much money invested in him that you need to have him develop sooner rather than later. You can take your time and just hope he makes the leap at some point. But there's still room for growth. And I think, you know, he showed some flashes in the G League. That's all fine and good. He just needs to do it more consistently. He needs to stay healthy. He needs to be able to show whichever team, in this case Miami, that he is willing to compete at a high level. So you want a big body there. I think you want a guy who's, you know, enthusiastic, especially when training camp comes around. You'll always wind up signing, you know, and I hate to call him this, but you wind up signing quote-unquote bodies to rough up some of your veterans so that they don't get complacent. You want to show them that you're willing to do the work, and hopefully that carries over if and when he goes to the G League. You know, if he stays with the Miami Heat roster, then he'll probably wind up being at the end of the bench. I mean, that's just
the
reality.
Yeah, I think he'll play mostly in the G League, right?
Yeah.
So,
I mean, there are possibilities there, but yeah.
The other part of that question is, why would they sign another big like Mickey, especially if he's going to mostly playing in the developmental league,
right?
When they're thin at small forward? And I thought about that, right? It's, why would you sign another big, especially somebody who seems redundant of O'Kara White, and we'll get to that issue here in a second with our next question, but what small forward are the Heat going to sign? Let's say they sign somebody of the ilk of Jordan Mickey, you know, the same sort of, you know, D-League, NBA tweener. He's not going to play small forward. It's not like they're going to suddenly find their starting small forward just in free agency right now, you know? So you might as well just sign the most talented guy, the most versatile guy, just the player that you're most excited about, and just have that player on your roster, or use that player in the D-League for now, because Miami, like, it seems like they're going to basically be playing three guard lineups for a lot of this season. Whether it's Rodney Magruder, Josh Richardson, Justice Winslow starting at small forward, I just don't see what small forward would have, that is a free agent currently, that they could have signed that would have even
been an improvement,
earned any playing time at all. Just
right.
There's so many guards on this roster. We know how much guard depth the Heat have right now. They can't afford to sign another player that could play the three, because they need all of the minutes available right now to distribute among their depth of guards, guys like Justice Winslow and all those guys. So you just get the best player, and Mickey was a good player, and that archetype that he fits, like you were talking about, Karl Anthony Towns, Porzingis, Draymond Green, if he starts to show a little bit of that, if he can kind of play that role in the NBA, this is going to end up being a really good signing for them. The more versatile big men you have, the better you are. Miami clearly knows that. They understand that. They didn't have that last year, and they are working really hard this season to build up their versatility in the front court. They know that that's the future of the game. So they're adding size. We know that the Heat didn't have a lot of size last year. They're adding guys that are long, that are athletic, that can play multiple positions. And I love this. I love this angle that they're going in.
Is it just me, or do you take issue with Billy's assertion that Miami is quote unquote thin at small forward? Because from my perspective, I'm you know, you just listed them off right now. We've got at least four players that could fit that role, right? I mean, you've got Josh Richardson, you've got Roddy Magruder, who started the bulk of it last year.
Yeah, they're not thin at small forward, but they're not elite at small forward.
Well, I mean, that's a whole other, yeah. You're not going to find that person right now. I don't know who's available as a free agent, some overpriced or too old veteran.
They have serviceable players at that position. You're right. Like, Magruder might not play any minutes, and he started at that spot almost all of last year. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, are we going to sign Aaron Aflalo? I mean, you know, guys like that. I mean, he signed with Orlando, obviously, but it gets a point. You know, it's like, do you want a guy like that that's a name, that's been in the league for 11 years and hasn't necessarily made a huge impact? Is he an upgrade over guys that like Richardson?
I'm glad you bring that up, because that's the Heat have clearly gone in that direction. They're not signing the Aaron Aflalos of the world. Like, Pat Riley, we know, prefers veterans, right? And he used to go ahead and just sign the guy, the Aaron Aflalo type, the guy that maybe has 2-3 more years in his career, who's clearly in the twilight of his career, but knows how to play the game, right? He can get on the floor and make some shots or whatever, make some plays. The Heat have clearly taken, they have shifted their approach. They are getting younger players because they know, look, they don't have a lot of draft picks in the future. They don't have a lot of cap space in the future to sign big name free agents. Any improvement from this team is going to come internally. It's going to be internal growth and development. And so instead of signing guys that are at the last legs of their career, get guys who haven't even started. Get guys who have something to reach, something to prove, a potential. And that's why you sign somebody like Jordan Mickey. The Heat don't have a superstar on this roster. I'm not saying Mickey is going to be a superstar, but we know he can develop into something better than whatever he is now. And that, I think, is the idea. You load up on so many of these guys. The more of these guys you sign and bring into your organization, the better you are increasing your chances to find role players, future NBA players. Not all these guys might not pan out, but the more of them you have, the better your chances are. So our next question comes from Chris Leach. Does Jordan Mickey make Okara White redundant? I like Okara White, but this seems like the Heat aren't as sold on him. I wouldn't read into it that way. I think the Heat, like I was just saying, they just want to load up on these guys. You want guys that are 6'8". You want guys that are and can hit three-pointers, right? Okara White is 6'8", and he can hit threes. Jordan Mickey is 6'8", and he can hit threes. Those guys are very valuable. The more of them you have, the better, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, there are concerns. I won't say they're not. I think we saw in his performance in Orlando, I mean, from having talked to coaches about Okoro and what he did later on in Las Vegas,
there's
still
league.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, if I didn't make that clear. There's still inconsistency there. I mean, Summer League is a lot about trying to test different things, and they had him bringing the ball up. There's an improved handle from what we saw last year, but there's still room for growth as far as his playmaking abilities and stuff like that. And, you know, he's a little undersized as far as matching up with bigger forwards. He probably fits best as a, you know, a forward, but either a smaller, you know, I can't see him as a power forward with today's versatility and his limitations. So I think there are issues. They'd like him to take another level, another step, but he hasn't taken it just yet. And so you want to add as much players and as much talent as you possibly can, and why not? So I don't know. Again, you're right. I don't see a redundancy there. I see maybe just in case, you know, you want to have as much potential, much talent as possible. You send a couple guys to the G League. You bring a couple guys up. You rotate, have them have an experience for the travel, the wear and tear. Look, Okoro already experienced that last year. He could learn from more experience. But I think for a guy like Jordan, you want to, you know, kind of switch him in and out if you possibly can. Maybe you don't get as much consistency that way. But I think at this point, what you really want is to see as much playing time and then have them kind of grow from that playing time.
I agree with what you were saying before, too. Okara White might be – he's more a small forward, power forward, a forward tweener.
Yeah.
Mickey
yeah.
– Jordan Mickey's got 30 pounds on Okara White. Mickey's 6'8", 235. White's 6'8", 204. So Mickey could play the four and the five, I think. That's the idea, right? That's kind of what you want him to turn into. And if you have both of them on the floor at the same time, let's say Okara White and Jordan Mickey both develop, right, into whatever, something more than they are now, enough to where they can warrant some NBA minutes. You could play both of them on the floor. They wouldn't be redundant of each other. Those are valuable skills. Like I said, length and shooting. And they can both handle the ball a little bit. That's something that you want. It's not a redundancy as far as, you know, you have two guys that can only drive to the rim or something. We've seen that be an issue. We've seen like the Chicago Bulls last season, guys who just need to get into the paint and handle the ball a lot in order to be effective, like Butler, Wade, and Rondo. That's a redundancy that's inefficient. Having guys that are 6'8 and can shoot threes is a redundancy that's efficient. Look at the Warriors, right? That's what everybody is going towards. So I like having multiple of these players. All right, we have a few more mailbag questions, but first we are asking our listeners to help us out with the show. A new season means we need a new intro song, and we wanted to give the musicians out there a chance to have their work featured on the show. You can email your submissions to lockedonheat@gmail.com, and we'll be taking submissions for the month of August. After the month, we'll choose one to be our new jingle for the season and give the artist a shout-out on each episode. There are no rules, so be as creative as you want. Again, you can submit your submissions to lockedonheat@gmail.com. We look forward to hearing your work. We've already heard a bunch of them. They're getting better and better and better the more we hear. So really looking forward to what you guys are submitting, and really looking forward to picking one. It's going to be tough to choose one. I don't know.
Yeah.
We'll see. We'll see what we'll do.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
All right. Let's move on to our mailbag here. And this next question comes from Claudia Regan, longtime listener. Mm-hmm. She writes, I would love to hear your thoughts on Udonis Haslem. I realize that he is the epitome of Heat culture, the captain of the team, and a mentor to the young players. But isn't that what coaches are for? Do you feel that he is worth not only the money, but also the 15th roster spot? And who do we dump if D-Wade comes back? That comes again from Claudia Regan. So interesting question. I've seen this kind of scuttlebutt on Twitter, on Heat Twitter before about, is it time to move on from UD? It seems like there's like some alternating thoughts there. Like, you love UD, but you don't want him having, you don't want to have him on the roster. And he might seem like superfluous at this point in his career.
Well, it's counterintuitive to what we were just talking about, right? You want to load up on young guys who have potential and all this stuff. The idea of keeping Haslem on the roster and using one of these valuable 15 roster spots, it seems counterintuitive. Why would you use that on a veteran? But there is a reason, right?
Yeah, I mean, I completely disagree with that he's superfluous, because, like, we've seen, you know, we've been to NBA locker rooms before. We know what it's like, the kind of camaraderie that they build, et cetera. A guy like UD proves invaluable. Like, we've seen their interaction with coaches. We've seen them talk about front office. As much of a glossy view as outside fans want to have of the league, the reality is that it's just like any employee-employer relationship. The coach barks orders. He controls your playing time. He impacts your way of life. This is not like your standard 9-to-5 job. Your coach defines how much you play, and as a result, that impacts your ability to make money in this contract or your future one. And so there is a tendency to view them, and rightfully so, as them versus us, being the players. And so a coach is one thing. Having a guy like Haslem, who's been in the league for, 15 years now, 14 years, and going on this 15th season, be there every day, running wind sprints, practicing, busting his butt in the weight room, leading guys, training sessions.
Right, and all of that is different when it's coming from a player as opposed to a coach. A coach is suited up. You know, like you said, they're barking orders at players. They are an authority figure. And Haslem is less of an authority figure and more of a respected peer when he's in the locker room as somebody that's on the 15-man roster. And look, we've seen Instagram videos and Snapchats of him all season working out with guys like Bam and all the young players on the roster. And it's not as impactful or even sincere when it's a coach. It's kind of, a coach can't do that. You know, a coach can't organize an off-season workout, right? You know, you can hang out and you can work out with your fellow teammates during the summer. You can play pickup game with your fellow teammates during the summer. Haslem is at that point where he's at the end of his career. He's not playing a whole lot. He is basically a coach on the court, but he's not. Technically, and that's the difference. That's what matters. You know, we see a guy like Juwan Howard on the bench. He was so important to the Heat a few years ago as a veteran, and eventually he was moved into the coaching staff. That could still happen for UD. I don't know that Haslem wants to or doesn't want to be a coach or an assistant coach or whatever, if he wants to even have a basketball position. But the fact that he's around these young players, and you talk about young guys like O'Kara White and Rodney Magruder, Jordan Mickey who's coming in, Hassan Whiteside, Bam Adebayo, all these guys who can use that extra seasoning and figuring out what Heat culture is, right? Haslam, when you're a player, you can truly lead by example. You can't do that when you're a coach. You can't really lead by example. You're an authoritative figure. You have to lead. You have to give assignments. You have to create a depth chart. You have to do all of these things when you're a coach. There isn't like this just hard work from a coach that could teach a player how to be a player within Heat culture. Haslam yeah. is that lighthouse for the players, and that's important. If you're trying yeah. to develop these young guys, have Haslam on the roster. He just increases the overall potential for development and growth when he's on the team.
Yeah, I mean, without a doubt. Like, you know, you look at teams across the league, there's always a need to have that veteran player. Every team has, no matter what their record is, there's always that one guy on there who's been through these battles, who knows what it takes, who can kind of see things playing it out on the floor and say, this reminds me of a particular play, or look for it. Look how the way he moves his feet, etc. They just have an affinity and an understanding after years of service of how to handle those kinds of situations.
Didn't Minnesota trade for Kevin Durant a few years ago? Or not Kevin Durant, Kevin Garnett. Garnett
specifically to play a role like that. Yeah, he was towards the end of his career.
Did not play. They didn't play him at all. They traded for him to put him in the locker room.
Right. Yeah, and it was important because they had guys like Karl Anthony Towns, et cetera. I mean, they had their Zach LaVine, all their young players, and it's important to have a guy like KG specifically for that because you know he's still competitive, you know he still wants to get out there, but as his body's breaking down, he still has a lot of information that he can pass on, and it's a voice of respect. I mean, the reality is, players now are younger than they used to be coming right after 1 year of school, et cetera. They know what it's like to see UD on TV. They've seen him play. They've seen him go up against, you know, players during the Big Three era, et cetera. That was an important thing for them, to witness, and they recognize that he's been around this long and that he's played with these kinds of superstars and what, you know, there's just a sense of loyalty and respect there. And I think that's important to maintain.
And it's part of the culture too, right? That sense of loyalty is that organization's loyalty to Haslam. You don't want to push him out because you're not going to be able to pay him as much if he's a coach as you would even the veteran minimum for a player. There's a sense of loyalty there that's important to the culture, something to establish there. Like if you are a true Heat lifer and you stay forever, we will not push you out the door. You play as long as you want.
So, to her second question there, right. Is it worth having that money paid towards Haslam as opposed to, say, a guy like Matt Williams or whomever, Jordan Mickey, somebody you might have to wind up waiving, knowing that they have more potential for playing time than Haslam is? To me, absolutely. With all the points that we just broke down right now, that's an inherent, incredible value. And for whatever he might be making on a veteran's minimum, it exceeds the value of whatever potential you might have. You can still have a guy like Mickey or Williams continue to blossom and develop in the G League. You cannot duplicate Haslam's level of experience.
Right. Who do we dump if D-Wade comes back, as far as the last part of that question? I think it's A.J. Hammonds.
Yeah, it seems likely. If he comes back at this point during the preseason.
Right. I think the Heat have 15 guaranteed rosters, right? Or guaranteed contracts. A.J. Hammonds is one of them.
Right.
So I think he's probably the guy. I think Matt Williams right now is out. He might get that second two-way contract.
Yeah. I saw him at a function a couple days ago, yesterday, where they, you know, when they opened Miami-Dade County Public Schools, he was there taking pictures with the kids and stuff like that. He's there for Miami Heat back to school. He's there along with, was it Derek Walton, I think? Yeah. He was there as well. Bam was there. So
Williams is part of this roster. I just think he's going to be on one of those two-way contracts. He'll be on the team through training camp, and then they'll sign him to a two-way deal. That's my prediction, at least.
Right.
It sounds like what you're saying is that he seems like he's part of the team.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Our next question comes from Taylor Monk on Twitter. He sent it to us using the hashtag AskLOHeat. He says, with so much depth, I think Bam would develop more in the G League for a period of time. It would clear rotational minutes and give him more playing time. I think you're onto something, Taylor. I think that's where we're going to see Bam Adebayo play most of this season, is just within the G League.
Yeah, I mean, I'd agree. Again, there's value in playing, gaining experience that way, and then they'll occasionally bring him up. Now, you've broken it down on occasion. And I think, you know, Chris talked about that when he came on our podcast months ago, how effective Miami has been in cultivating their G League team. It's the consistency of the message. They run, you know, as opposed to, say, like what, you know, Jerry Stackhouse did with the Raptors 905ers, as opposed to the way that Dwayne Casey runs the Raptors. There is a consistency there between Sioux Falls mm-hmm. that mirrors what they do at the big league level. You know, the fact that Dan Craig was able to come up from the D League at that point and then take a slot as the assistant head coach to Eric Spoelstra speaks to how much there's a consistency there. And the fact, of course, that there's young players that need his approach and his experience, you know. But they're a shared message. They have shared defensive schemes, et cetera. They want to have these guys understand these things so that when they come up to the NBA, as they invariably or hopefully will, they'll be fully acclimated. And you can't duplicate the travel or the experience of seeing LeBron James or other superstars that you grew up watching. That's something that's inimitable. And so you do want Bam to get that kind of experience, but you're going to figure out a balance. And I'm sure the coaching staff already has a plan in place mm-hmm. on how to balance that experience at the big league level with the also important experience of playing daily in the G League.
I mean, his whole season will be blended in between the two. He'll see minutes. Yeah. And we know how Spoelstra is with his rotations, right? Bam could play 20 minutes one game and they'll be in Sioux Falls the next week. It's going to be part of the plan for him. The development for him is important. He's still a rookie. He's raw. They knew that when they drafted him, but that talent level is there. And so you want to continue to develop that talent, hone him in a little bit, and then 2-3 years down the road, I think he's going to be a really, really good player in this league. He just needs, you know, he needs a little bit more polishing up right now, and the G League is a good spot for that.
Absolutely.
Our final question comes from Big Pat. Given how the Heat started last season, is it worth the risk trying to switch up the lineups, or should they just go with what worked for a majority of the second half, sans Luke Babbitt? So what Big Pat is asking here, the second half starting lineup was Goran Dragic, Dion Waiters, Rodney Magruder, Luke Babbitt, and Hassan Whiteside. Now, you take Luke Babbitt out, right, because he plays for the Hawks now. And maybe you insert Kelly Olynyk into that spot, so you still have Tyler Johnson and James Johnson. You have that duo coming off the bench. You bring Justice Winslow back into the mix, but you don't give him the starting small forward spot. That stays with Rodney Magruder. Do you just stick with that because it worked for the second half of last season, the Heat going 30-11 in the second half?
I don't think so. I think you want to be able to maximize whatever talent you have. And you know, that part of that is the fact that you've signed Olynyk. Part of that is the fact that Winslow is coming back and healthy, that you've got another year of Josh Richardson, James Johnson, guys like that. Now they're a little bit more experienced with the Heat system. I think it's about evaluating the talent that you have and understanding the best fit. You know, maybe Miami doesn't have on the surface elite level talent, but they have good pieces, players with versatility that can fit in a different number of ways. And so it's going to be up to Spoelstra and the coaching staff to figure out how those pieces work best. Look, we didn't see a lot of that drive and kick game that was so effective in the second half of the season during the first half of the season, just because they didn't have those shooters there. They weren't comfortable. Dion was hurt or turning the ball over. They had Justice kind of chucking up shots. Hassan was getting a lot of touches. But eventually that evolved over time. They figured out what was most effective. I think it's going to be something similar where they have to understand what the strengths of this team is and how to balance them out. You've got outside shooting with Olynyk, so you know that you want to have him out there. Are you going to have him starting alongside, Hassan Whiteside? No, probably not such a good fit because you want him as the backup center position to stretch the floor.
Right.
So, do you start Justice Winslow and down the line? You want to figure out how they integrate best, how they play off of one each other's strengths, and I think that's what you'll look for in the preseason, to be honest with you.
There's a model to be followed from last season, and that is the drive and kick game. That is that backcourt of Waiters and Dragic, and that was an effective backcourt.
That's the strengths of their game, right?
Exactly. So you want to put players around them, and Whiteside is entrenched as the starting center, obviously. So you want to put players that complement those skill sets of those three guys. And Rodney Magruder was serviceable, and he was impressive, and he made really good plays down the stretch. But at times, he was taken advantage of by opponents. I wrote something for allyoucanheat.com this week about projecting the starting depth chart for next season.
Yeah.
And I've got Josh Richardson as the starting three. Now, maybe I'm wrong in that, but it just makes the most sense because he's the perfect in-between of Rodney Magruder and Justice Winslow. He shoots better than Winslow, but he's longer than Magruder, so you gain a little bit more defensively there. He's a better playmaker than Magruder, too. So he's got, like, a nice mix in between those two guys. You start Josh Richardson there. You bring James Johnson in because you just signed him to a 4-year deal. You want to see what else he can give you. We saw in the last 5 games of last season when he was a starter, as good as he was coming off the bench, he was even better as a starter at the end of the year there. Let him, I feel like he's earned that position there as a starting power forward. You put him there and the Heat could be better. You know, it's unreasonable to think that just because they went 30-11 down the second half of last season that they'll win 60 games if they just do that for a full season, right? They've got to improve. You can't just stay the same. You've got to improve, and it's not enough to just improve depth or improve the bench. You've just got to be a better team, and that's where the Heat are. And as you're saying, in preseason, they're going to experiment with a lot of different lineups and a lot of different rotations. We know that Spoelstra is going to do that, and he likes to do that. They'll find something that works the best. Just because it worked last year doesn't mean it's going to work this year. They took the league by surprise last year. The league will be more prepared for the Miami Heat this upcoming season. That's why you've got to switch things up and you got to improve.
Right. No, I agree. I mean, look at last year. You had Derek Williams playing a lot during the preseason. Expectations were that he might start. Then he didn't wind up playing until, what was it, like the 11th game of the season, something like that?
Right.
You know, you never know what will happen. And, you know, you want to be able to find out how everybody fits best. And yeah, absolutely. So, yes. To answer Big Pat's question, absolutely worth the risk. You want to try and yes. maximize the team's talent level. It's higher than it was at the start of last year, even without Dwayne Wade or Chris Bosh there. You want to have as much talent as you possibly can out there. You want to find the pieces that work best. James Johnson as a starter, or Richardson as a starter, et cetera. But I trust that this coaching staff will figure it out. And look, at the worst, they'll make a change. They'll see something later on, and they'll go, you know what, maybe it wasn't working. Let's mess it around, let's go back to how it was last season. But yeah, I definitely expect a difference from the second half of last year.
All right, well, that's all we have for today, whether you're listening on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you for listening. Today's show is brought to you by SeatGeek, the smartest and easiest way to find tickets for the games, concerts, and shows that you want to go to. It's never been easier to get the seats that you want for a great value. SeatGeek has the best deals on every ticket in the house, wherever you want to sit. Download the SeatGeek app and use the promo code LONBA to get $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. You can send mailbag questions like these to lockedonheat@gmail.com or via Twitter using the hashtag AskLOHeat. To support the show, make sure you download every episode and subscribe on iTunes. Rate us, review us, say nice things about us. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.
It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how. Napa know-how. At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum 3 items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.